Ben Moore has been in love with bees for as long as anyone can remember. And as far as we can tell, the feeling is entirely mutual. Although he still sometimes feels the sting of his passion. Hang around, learn a little. It's as sweet as honey and always a buzz. It's the Ultimate Pollinators Podcast with Ben, his friends and associates, and of course, Ben's bees.
Hey everyone, Bees with Ben. Another fantastic episode. I have an amazing, I love hearing people researching about bees and learning because that's, I learn off all the researchers and it's so cool. And I met the amazing Karen Santos at the Sydney Beekeeping Conference. It was absolutely fantastic. She's doing some incredible research, more specifically on pollens and obviously pollens and bees. So it's really, really cool. So I've got Karen coming up and I just want a big shout out to say thank you so much because she's super, super busy. And especially now, obviously, spring is almost here. And for me personally, I'm getting ready for spring, that swarming season. So I'm getting boxes all done and frames ready. So if you're a beekeeper, super important, be ready, you know, for swarm management to make sure, obviously, we've got to really avoid that, especially if you're in New South Wales. That's super important. But obviously management of bees because we obviously want to prevent them swarming or if they do swarm, be prepared. Have the equipment ready to pop them into a box is definitely important. So once again, thank you. We have Karen and this is really cool. You're going to love this episode. Hey, Karen, how are you doing? Thank you so much for your time. I'm super excited to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you, Ben, for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Thank you. Now, first question I'm going to ask. So we've got lots to talk about because you're a bit of a guru. You know, I've been doing a lot of research about you, Karen, and you've done some amazing research. But first question I'm going to ask is obviously we met at the conference, the Bee Conference in Sydney back in April. Yeah. Now my question is, what was the best part of the conference for you?
Well, I think the best part was having the opportunity to see and to learn about like different different people and different research they're doing was really diverse and I guess was different from what I'm used to. I don't know, I would normally go to more like an ecology based conference. So you don't get to see a lot of research and a lot of feedback from beekeepers. And that was really, really good, really nice to hear more about it. And also had the opportunity to chat with different people. And even like the breaks between the talks, we would like have a chance to catch up with people that I knew their names, but I could connect name with faces. And it was really, really good. And it was super big, a lot of people. I didn't expect it would have so many people. I think we were all excited to be back to conferences after lockdowns and everything. So, yeah, it was a lot of things, a lot of good things in the conference.
That is awesome. Now, you've got a bit of an accent. So tell us where you're from.
Yes. Well, I'm from Brazil. I've been in Australia for 3 years now. I came to Australia to do my PhD. And, yeah,
awesome. Brazilian. That's awesome. Now being Brazil, that's the land of the Africanized honeybees, the origin. What was your experience with bees back home in Brazil?
I think my research and everything started in 2012.
Awesome. Okay.
I am a biologist. Yes. So I did I studied biology and I think it was in my first or second year, I got a chance to start like an internship they have for undergraduates. And in this internship, I got the chance to work with a beekeeper and a pollenologist. And we were analyzing pollen grains, putting pollen traps in honeybee hives, in the Africanized honeybee. and looking what sort of resources they were collecting in a given area. And that was how everything started. I had zero knowledge because biology is, like, I don't know, it's so complex. You learn from like human body to plants and animals and mammals and all sorts of animals. And when I had a chance to learn more about bees, and I was like, wow, this is so fascinating. And this professor, she looked at me and she said, well, if you want to, you could do like what sort of honors and learn more about pollen and bees. And I was like, wow, that's great. And then I spent like the other 2 years of my undergraduation studying bees and mainly focusing on pollen and what sort of like diets and resources they were using in the area of Brazil, with like Brazilian savanna. And that was it. Like, that was my first, I think, research with bees and my first contact with bees.
And what was the Africanized bees? So you mentioned you started off with them. So talk us about their disposition of an Africanized bee. So compared to the ones in Australia.
Yeah, well, they're more, I think everybody knows, they're quite more aggressive and more energetic when you work with them.
Yes, yeah.
And you need to be more cautious, I guess. But it was like, I didn't have other things to compare with. So everybody was like, well, they're crazy, they're killers, and they're, you know, you should be afraid of them. And every time I would talk to someone, like even my family, I said, like, yeah, I started working with bees. Oh, what kind of bees? Oh, honeybees. Oh my goodness, are they dangerous? Yes. I mean, if they bite and they sting you, whatever. Yes. And I was like, oh, it's like, okay. So yeah, but I think was different. Now I know it was different because I have other like backgrounds and I can compare with like honeybee hives here in Australia, for example. And you can walk around and they're just like minding their own business, right?
Exactly.
And they're like, oh, you couldn't do any noise, or they would get really agitated, or even like wear any perfumes or anything. It was more like a lot of, you know, details and to work with them as well.
Yeah, more things to think about. Interesting. And so that's so cool, because I've done a lot of traveling, but I've never experienced Africanized honeybees. So I'm sort of looking forward to that experience in a weird sort of way. I don't know, that sounds a bit weird, but you want to become a biologist. So talk us about that. So why did you go down that side there at your very start, I guess, of your career? So why did you want to do that?
To be honest, I keep looking at stories of people like, oh, my dream was always like be a biologist when I was a little kid. And for me, it was not like that. I was in my year 12 and was like, what am I going to do with my life, you know? And I was like, well, what do I like to do? And I remember like the only subject I would love in school was biology. And I was like, well, this is something I know that I love to learn about. So I'm young and I'm going to give it a go. And I started biology and it was something like, okay, I'm going to start with biology, but maybe I'm going to change it to know chemistry or any other area. And I actually fell in love with biology. And what made me actually stay and finish were like studying bees. I guess I found something that I was passionate about, and that was like a lot of things to learn, and I found good people to also guide me. So yeah, I think biology was always the first thing that would come to my mind when I was thinking like, well, what I would love to do for the rest of my life. Yes. And yeah,
that's so cool. And that's led you into some amazing research. So we've got lots to talk about there, but the one obviously at the conference, so you had this awesome presentation where you spoke about the obviously bees and pollination on almond orchards and what else do they eat. So talk us through that presentation, if you don't mind, Karen.
Yeah. Okay. That was a collaboration we did with Liz Frost. I think you had her here on your podcast.
Yes, yes.
In the past. She is amazing. So she had this data. She collected pollen. She removed pollen traps from honeybee hives in almond orchards. in 2017, and she had like this pollen baskets, right? Samples, and she said like, well, she looked more at the flowering season and duration of flowering and when you should remove the hives or not. And the pollen, she hadn't looked at yet. And I was like, well, we could ask some questions. If you had like, if you collect the pollen that bees were bringing to the hives throughout the flowering season, we could ask some questions like, what else are bees eating like at the beginning, middle, and at the end of the flowering season? And especially my main question was if all the hives, they would collect the same resources, especially like hives that are just next to each other or hives that are 1 kilometer or 2 kilometers away from each other, if they would go for the same resources. And we found some interesting results. They all collect really different resources. The diets are really diverse, and which was surprising for the beekeeper in that area, because almond is very attractive for bees.
Okay.
I guess they love almond pollen, and still when the orchard was like in peak bloom, bees would still look for something else.
Okay.
Right. So this was really, I think, was a cool finding. Almond was the main resource, but they would collect additional, like complementary resources.
Okay. And what percentage of that, Karen, was that? Like on roughly?
It varied a lot, okay. But I have the percentage like per hive, but like almond was 80% of everything they collected. But there was like other 20% for some hives. For some hives, were just like 1%, you know?
Interesting.
Almond would be like 99% of the pollen they would collect for the whole month. But other hives, I think the greatest amount of non-almond pollen was 40% in one hive, if I'm not wrong, like 62 to 38, okay. Yes. Something like that.
Interesting. And is there a reason why bees are so attracted to pollen from almonds?
I think so. From what I've never did research with the components of the you know, sugar or pollen, but from what I've read, it's really good in protein, the almond pollen, and so it's really attractive for them.
Interesting. Yeah, wow, yeah. That's interesting. And which part of the region was that research done? Where did you do that, Karen? Whereabouts?
It was in Victoria.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Interesting.
In Lake Powell.
Okay. Interesting. Have you found? Obviously, everyone's talking about it, and it's a little bit like COVID. We're all talking about varroa. Has that created? I know. It's like COVID varroa. We're probably all sick of talking about it now.
But yeah.
Has that impacted any research you've been doing as of recently, or as far as the varroa goes?
I was lucky enough to finish my data collection just like before everything started, right?
Okay.
Of course, there will be some impact in the long term, I would say, for our lab, because there are people that are still collecting and I was helping them. But my research, I finished the data collection. Awesome. I would, yeah, super lucky. It would be tricky for me if I still had like more data collection to do, because they have like lockdowns, and I'm working with blueberries as well.
Okay.
And in Coffs Harbour, and in that area, they just found a few hives contaminated. So it's everybody with a red flag now, super afraid. So, yeah, I think it would be tricky for me.
Yeah, no, definitely, for sure. And what about what research? So you've done that research prior, which is absolutely, absolutely fascinating. What are you working on at the moment, Karen?
Lots of things. Yes. Well, mainly with blueberries.
Okay.
I'm also – one of my researches at the moment – is looking at the impacts of the protective netting over the blueberry crops, the effects of that on the pollen flow. So if bees are bringing more like blueberry pollen to the stigmas of the blueberry flowers, or non-blueberry pollen, if comparing blocks that are no protective nettings with blocks, with netted blocks, and yeah, and I'm basically looking at the flowers and looking at the pollen loads that bees are putting there to see if nettings can actually decrease pollen and consequently fruit set, or if there's like a way that we can manage the netting and still have a good fruit set.
That's interesting. Wow. Because the almond, the pollen from almonds and the pollen from blueberries, would you say it's like chalk and cheese? Because the nutrition is very different, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, bees don't like blueberry pollen.
Yeah.
It's very poor, like in nutrition. They visit the flowers mainly after nectar, but pollen, it's really not. They ended up like collecting pollen because they don't have anything else around sometimes, so they have to. But they don't really like blueberry pollen. Comparing to almond, oh my goodness, no!
It's like, love almond. Chalk and cheese. And now, is that because of the, as you said, you just sort of touched base on it, then the lack of nutrition in blueberry pollen? Is it just because of like low proteins? Is that why?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Basically, yeah.
And what about other crops? Is there any other crops that you're working on as far as, you know, flowers and bees?
Yes. Well, blueberries, blackberries, okay, raspberries, and apple. We're going to start, because of COVID, apple was one of my main crops that I was intending to work in my PhD. But then because of the borders restrictions between New South Wales and Queensland, the farms that we had like set up to perform the experiments and everything were in Queensland, and we couldn't go there in the apple season in 2020 and in 2021.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So yeah, now I'm finishing my PhD at the end of this year. But we're still going to do a field work trip so we can collect the data and work on that later. But yes, so basically with apple, I'm going to look at the pollen flow between different cultivars, different apple cultivars. So they need like cross-pollination, and like some almonds as well, and some blueberries. Sometimes they leak. They need cross pollination from different cultivars, different varieties. So they interplant like maybe two or three cultivars within the same block, within the same area. And I want to know how the bees are moving between these two cultivars. If they're moving cross rows or along the rows. And we have like an artificial pollen dye that's fluorescent. So we can put on the flowers and leave it there for the day. And at night, we go with UV lights and see like where the bees are moving.
Wow, that's so cool. That's interesting.
That's super cool. Yeah.
That's really cool. Like a little discotheque for bees, you know what I mean? Having that
fluorescent. It's quite beautiful at night, actually.
Yeah, it would be, exactly. What's the active? Is it the fluorescent? Is that based from coral or something? What's the active in the fluorescent?
Good question. It's just like a pounded dye that has like this ink that's fluorescent ink.
Interesting. Okay.
Yes, more like a pollen dust.
I used to sort of do a lot with fish, and we used to give a type of fish called a zebra danio this fluorescent food that was derived from coral, and it'd make them fluoresce, so it'd actually make them glow in the dark. So it's kind of cool. Very interesting. So that research is absolutely amazing. What you're doing there, far as all the and your sort of speciality, as you said, is obviously with pollens and across the different crops.
Yeah. Definitely, the main topic of my thesis would be like the heterospecific pollen deposition on different crops and the impact of that. So yeah, but it's hard to say. I'm always afraid to say like, oh, you're specialties and like in pollen or whatever, it's really tricky because it's something really hard to work with.
Yes.
And there are people like the pollenologists, people who are really, you know, have a lot of knowledge about pollen identification and so on. I'm more like trying to learn all the time about it, but it's really tricky to work with pollen identification and pollen. Everything related to pollen is really tricky, actually.
It is interesting and absolutely fascinating as well. So regards to the obviously working with sort of blueberries and things, are you working on multiple different projects at once? Do you find, like, are you working on different projects at once or like many or more? You just sort of work on one sort of more specific project, do that research and then on to the next?
It's actually everything at the same time.
Yes.
We don't have much time during the PhD, I guess. But yeah, data collection, I think you go out there and you, at least that's what I've done. We've collected like a lot of data thinking like this is going to be part of one project. And then you ended up with so much like things and so much data. And you look at that and it's like, well, I cannot just combine everything and have like, you know, just one outcome, like one research paper, like this is what I found. And you kind of like divide and you start like making different questions and look at your results and like, okay, I could ask this and that. And you ended up with like multiple projects, multiple things that you want to work on. I guess that's how it happened with me. And we collected data in blueberries and there was a lot of data, a lot of farms, and you have like different cultivars, you have different farm management, and you just like, you know, you get as much data as you can. And then I started looking at this protective netting and questioning like myself. This was not my first project, was not to be about netting. But when I got there, I had zero knowledge about blueberry like system, the orchard system, right? When I got here. And when I got there, I saw like so many different nettings, and some growers will use the bird netting,
yes.
Others will use the hail netting, and some will use both. And sometimes they just open the blocks and they leave it open. And in the middle of the season, they close. Others just leave it open for the whole season. And it's just, okay, I'm just looking at the pollen on the flower and I'm just ignoring this, what's going on here. So it's like, okay. And then I started like taking notes and actually measuring nets and everything. And I said, well, I found something cool, a relationship here. So now we have a whole project about nettings because this is having some impact on bees and pollen flow. And it was the same with the pollen, I guess, because I started seeing like, okay, honeybees, when they come like multiple times to the same flower, they actually start to take off the pollen instead of putting more. And this happens for blueberry, but I don't know if it happens for the other crops because they have different flower morphologies. So I need to look at these more specifically. So there you go, another project about multiple visits. And it's all like, so you ended up like you're there to collect, you know, data, but you have different questions, so you have different projects to work at the same time.
That is so cool. That is awesome. And what would you say that the consensus with the netting, that's all bad for the bees, the generally?
Yes, they limit the movement.
Okay, yes.
I could see. I don't think they are as bad. Let me rephrase it. They have a lot of impact as polytunnels.
Yes.
I guess when you use polytunnels, that type of cover, they will affect more like the temperature and the wind speed, everything in the orchard. So they kind of like affect more the bees because they lose the control and also they get more stressed,
yes,
because of the temperature. And with nettings, it's more about the size of the hole. If the bees are going to be able to pass through and to go inside the orchards and come out, because some orchards, they keep the hives outside and other orchards, they keep the hives inside. So yeah, it has some impact. You can see, like, when you visit an area, you can see lots of bees like stuck in the netting.
Really? Okay. Oh wow.
So yeah, some are chives, they have like a really small holes and they kind of struggle to get in and out. So that of course impacts the pollen flow as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and the pollination. Very, very interesting. And another some research you've done was I think you've done this with a team of people. Was it the cavity occupancy in wild honeybees? Were you part of that one?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, this was with Manu. She's one of my co-supervisor here, and Romina, Manu, and Rika. And that was a literature review that we published, I think was 2020 or 2021, I don't remember now. Yeah. And yeah, it was really a really good paper because we could see the cavity, the area that bees occupy, and it was actually good to see, because some people would think that they just have like bad impact. The honeybees are just like occupying all the cavities of all the space, but we found that actually we need more evidence and we need more documentation of these statements, I guess.
It's interesting because a lot of people are sort of against European honeybees because they displace, you know, native fauna, you know, possums and fasciculus and all these little weird sort of marsupials that live in those high logs of those trees.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they get a bit of a bad rap sometimes. So, and what about the future? Obviously, work on some cool projects now. I was mentioned about the shea cloth and the effects on pollination and bees and so forth. What's a project you'd love to do? Like, is there one particular project that you just would be? I really want to do that.
Well, I don't know. I have so many things that I really want to do, but you know. Another thing that I would really love to do is to work with bees and birds, the interaction between them. I've seen, even especially in the orchards, I've seen a lot of really cool interactions between bees and birds, honeybees and birds, honey eaters, and the dynamic, how that could potentially change the dynamic, that, like pollination dynamics. So this is something that I would really like to look more and to study more about.
Wow, so, interesting. I was going to put a joke in there about birds and bees, but we'll leave that alone. And what about what would be, I suppose, two questions, Garrett. So what would be the hardest part about being a researcher? Is there one particular aspect that you find very, obviously forget COVID, so we'll forget that because obviously that's had a big impact on all researchers. That aside, but what would be sort of the hardest part?
I think, I don't know, maybe this is just for me, of course, my opinion. But I would say the time management for me.
Yeah.
I think the hardest is that it's a type of job that you don't leave somewhere when you go home. It just, you know, follows you wherever you go. And sometimes, like, I'm just, I don't know, on like Saturday morning with my family, and I'm there like thinking about that research. They cannot, you know, leave me alone. That question, and they're like, "Oh, I see something." I'm like, "Oh, I could write that down." I'm like, "Oh no, this would be like a great argument in my discussion." And so this is the hardest part. Sometimes you are there, but you are not completely there because you keep thinking about your research. So, yes. Yeah.
I totally understand. I think that word is called passion because you're passionate about what you do. So that's why you're always thinking about it. And obviously that was the worst part. What about the best part of doing research, Karen? Is there one particular aspect that you love?
I love everything about it, but I think keep learning new things. And it's just like, especially working with bees and this tiny little beings, you just, you know, you don't, sometimes you don't give them enough credit. And when like I'm researching something and I look at the results and I'm like, wow, so this is how they do it. So this is so fascinating. And I think for me, it's just learning new things and getting to know more about bees, and especially here now in Australia, you are in a different environment and, you know, everything is different. So if you keep learning and coming to a different country, it's even more exciting.
Yes, interesting. Now, speaking about, obviously, talking about countries, is there any plans to go back home to Brazil, do any more research back home in the not-too-distant future?
Well, I don't know at the moment. I will finish my PhD at the end of this year. And my partner, he's a vet.
Okay.
And he's working at the DPI here. And now he got a job for a few years. So I guess we will stay for a bit longer. But I don't know. I have plans to go back at some point. I'm not sure when, but yeah, definitely go back at some point.
That's awesome, because it's so interesting, because I was talking to Dr. Trong Tran, who's done some amazing research on the Brazilian red propolis, which is very interesting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was very interesting.
Yeah, I've read about the Brazilian green propolis, but yeah.
There's a red one and a green one, and they've both got these really high amounts of, I think, phenols and some really amazing properties. So it's absolutely interesting. Well, fantastic.
Yeah, it's a shame that we don't have a lot of research about the propolis here in Australia, right?
No, that's right. I think it's growing. Dr. Tran is doing some really interesting research in the Sunshine University. So very interesting.
There's a lot of potential here as well.
Exactly. Good. Karen, that was absolutely amazing. I just want to say thank you so much for your time, because I know you're super busy, and I just really super appreciate you being on this platform and just sharing the knowledge. And what we'll do, maybe in a year's time, we're going to get you back on, and because it'll be interesting to hear more about, especially the impacts of the shade cloth and on the blueberries and things. So that'll be, and any other cool research you're doing. So look forward to chatting in about a year's time. And thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
No worries. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. How awesome was that episode, Karen? What an absolute superstar. You know, the research she's doing, and I so look forward to it. In a year's time, we're going to have another chat with her and find out more about that, because it's a really, I suppose, controversial thing, these monocultural crops. Now, it's not good for bees. There's no doubt about it. It's just, you know, blatantly, it's, you know, when you're dealing with a lack of nutrition or a single source pollen, single source of nutrition, it is not good for them. But as humans, we need to eat. So I'm very much on the fence with it. But, you know, when we've got awesome people like Karen Santos, you know, doing some really cool research. So amazing. Thank you once again, Karen. That was absolutely awesome. And don't forget, if you want to hear someone, shoot me through a message. I'm super keen to sort of talk to anyone, all different subjects. This is about you as the listener, to hear about all different things about, you know, bees and the effects of bees and anything. So please shoot me through a message, 0437077792. And I super duper appreciate your time. And don't forget, take care of yourself, take care of each other, and take care of those bees. Bye for now.